hope to come back on this program with my wonderful colleagues here and talk to you about that sometime in the spring when we win that award.
Great. All right. Well, it's time to go. Thank you, Barb Bratton, Heather Thompson, Marcia Sear, and Brandy Cummings from the Kenosha Public Library. Congratulations on your Wisconsin Library Association 2020 Wisconsin Library of the Year. And this is Education Matters. Thank you.
Thank you, Karen.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Education Matters, heard each Saturday morning at 10:30 on WGTD HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva. Archived programs are available on our website, WGTD.org, and you're invited to continue the discussion on the Education Matters Facebook page. You're listening to WGTD HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva, your gateway to public radio. This is WGTD HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva. You're listening to Community Matters, a program that explores and highlights various local issues and organizations. It's co-hosted by Len Iaquinta, a nonprofit manager, fundraiser, and consultant, Laura Sumner Kuhn, a former journalist with the Racine Journal-Times, who currently serves as an adjunct instructor at UW Parkside, and Jane Herring, a former marketing manager at Gateway Technical College. Community Matters shares its time slot with the WGTD Radio Theater. And now, here's today's program.
Good morning. This is Laura Sumner Kuhn, your host today on Community Matters. And my guest today is Portia Bennett Bay, whom Time Magazine has chosen as one of the Guardians of the Year, where she had an opportunity to meet with President-elect Joe Biden in a church in the aftermath of the shooting, as the community was reeling. And she told President-elect Biden, "You need the truth," and that she speaks for the people in the city because she lives in this city. And the truth of the matter is that we are heavily angry. And she said this: the anger didn't start with the shooting of Jacob Blake, but for decades there have been what she termed as generational curses on communities of color, where there has been death, where there has been more police attention than in other places, where people have felt targeted, and it is time to right things. And this is her backyard, she said. And so ever since then, her life has changed, and I am excited to hear how Portia, how all about you. So welcome to the program.
Thank you.
You've said that you're just a girl who grew up in Kenosha. So tell us a little bit about what growing up in Kenosha was like.
It was beautiful. We had everything. The predominantly Asiatic neighborhoods the Wilson area had a Boys and Girls Club and programs going on over there. We had the CYC, which was like the main gathering for everybody in the city who was involved in sports, that's like basketball. We had Great Skate, we had the drive-in, we had the Lincoln Center. There were thriving grocery stores in every neighborhood. We had the Kmart and Walmart in these neighborhoods. We had, you know, we had a lot in these different neighborhoods. Now it's just all gone, like nothing. We have to drive out far just to grocery shop. And if you don't have transportation, you got to deal with ordering things and stuff like that. We don't have Great Skate anymore. We don't have the drive-in anymore. We don't have the Boys and Girls Club in the Wilson area. They now have this big one, which is just, I don't know what it's for, but it's there. We do not have the Lincoln Center. The neighborhood that I live in had a grocery store that now has been closed for 5 years, maybe going on six. It's a lot that was taken away from these neighborhoods, and it's been pushing people out. And so growing up, it was beautiful. But now it's not as beautiful as it was before.
And I think in in the last 9 months or so, the whole world is recognizing how we have isolated communities, and there has been grave injustice in communities, especially when it comes to over-policing, perhaps, that right now, I would imagine the community is still reeling with some realizations about the decision not to charge the officer who shot Jacob Blake 7 times, the realization that just on the eve of Martin Luther King holiday coming up on Monday, we have experienced an insurgency on the nation's capital where white nationalism, white supremacy was not even in the shadows. It was starkly storming the Capitol. And that has shaken us to realize we've been complacent about what has been happening to our brothers and sisters who are people of color in this country. Can you tell us a little bit about United as One and how it grew and what you aspire to do through this organization that you've created in the last few months and how you hope to lead change?
United as One came about after I had separated from there was an organization called Black, Black Lives Activists of Kenosha. Separating from there, I'm still close with two of them, Carl Green and Nick Larson. Those are like my brothers. You can't tear me away from them. Those are my brothers. United as One is because I wanted everybody together at a point in time. But, you know, everybody has different visions. Everybody has, you know, different ways of wanting to do things. So it just became me by myself starting this nonprofit. And so far, it's been a blessing because I've been able to bless others by doing the care package giveaways and stuff like that. Like, I actually have different moms who will be coming to pick up diapers and, you know, hygiene products and stuff like that today. What I want from United as One is to be able to be that resource that Kenosha no longer provides. You know, Community Action used to be the go-to place. You know, they used to have so many different go-to places for the people here, and it hasn't been that. You know, it hasn't been what we've been needing. So what I want, and let me not say what I want, what I am going to have happen, because to say what I want means I'm already sounding defeated as to it may not happen, but I cannot sound defeated. We are taught, you know, a person never knows its strength without a foe. So I can't know if it's accomplishable if I don't even try to accomplish it. So what will be happening is I will make a way to get it to where I can help those who want to get a GED, those who want to get training for like HVAC and welding and things like that to help them get a job. A lot of people can't get financial aid. You know, it's hard. So if United as One can help fund that, then that's what I'm going to do. If a person is lacking money for rental assistance, I will help with that. If they need help with utility assistance, then I'll be helping with that. If a mom is lacking groceries, then I will be giving out, you know, if I can, from $50 to $100 to $200 gift card to go and purchase groceries, formula. A lot of moms, you know, can only use certain ones and WIC doesn't cover it. We have, like myself, who is vegan, we have a lot of vegan people who, you know, can't afford a lot of different things. So they need that assistance. transportation. A lot of people, you know, can't depend on Kenosha Transit. The schedules are kind of crazy. So if I can get them, you know, a transportation to where they need to go to and things like that, pretty much United as One is going to be that second mom, I should say, that second home where they know, you know, if they don't meet the criteria for a lot of things here in Kenosha, then they can actually come to us. There will be no stipulations put on what people need help with. You know, if you need the help, you will receive the help. And that's just how I see it. I do not like stipulations being put on anything with helping people. If you're in it to help people, you help them. You know, it shouldn't be no, well, you need to bring me this, this, and this. Listen, if you bring me proof of this utility bill, here is your payment, you know, and we're going to get you set to where you can start working on a payment plan and you won't be in this situation anymore. Financial literacy classes, I feel, needs to be offered as well. So I'll be partnering with some people to start that and also trying to see if we can get that added to the school board curriculum because it is needed a lot. And I feel it should start early within the education system so that the children in the school systems are already ahead of the game, because that's something we weren't taught. You know, home ec needs to come back. I feel there should be mentoring programs. Like, it's a lot that I will be doing, but I won't be doing it alone, of course, but United as One will be, you know, here for a long time, very long time.
Portia, you've gone through quite a transformation in your own life in the last few months. In our discussions before this interview, you had been a worker at Amazon. You had been working in in-home care, and you're also an entrepreneur. Tell us a little bit about that turn of events for you in these last few months.
I was an in-home caretaker. The area where the home was a right-wing area. So it was predominantly, you know, Trump supporters there. And I would get like ugly stares every morning that I would leave because I worked overnight. And mind you, the house is on a dead end with none but woods surrounding it. So being a Moorish American, you know, you get that look because the color of my skin. And the first night when the Jacob situation happened, of course, the city was on fire and there were no lifts available. And it was an issue with me being able to come in. And then, too, I'm thinking about my safety. Like, you know, I already get ugly looks. You think I'm going to come out there now? So I did quit and I've been protesting ever since. But I had already been a sole proprietor even while being a caretaker. So, you know, my income hasn't stopped at all. Even with having the organization, if I'm not getting like donations delivered or people, you know, donating like $20 to $100 for the care package items, I use my own personal money for it. So it's like, I've been okay. You know, I don't live beyond my needs, so I know how to survive. Besides, I've been homeless. I've been without a lot of stuff before, so it's no, you know, I know how to live without it. But now it's just strictly community work and being in the temple. That is number one. Yes, the people of the community come, of course, but the business of being in the temple is most important. That is what keeps me in the community, because we are supposed to help uplift fallen humanity. So that coincides with everything that I do, all of my teachings, the principles that I live off of on a daily basis pretty much helps me keep United as One going and helps me be out here with all of my other brothers and sisters and everybody else in the community who are trying to rebuild the communities.
Portia, you talk a little bit about the temple and being a Moorish American. You're a Moorish American Muslim, as you've described it to me. Tell us a little bit about what are the primary foundations that you have stood on in your faith that give you the strength to do this. Talk a little bit about your faith.
Well, the Moors are most definitely a major part of history here in America. And it's not really taught during in history classes, but we are most definitely a major part of history. There's, you know, treaties proving that. There are declarations. There are so many things. Like, there is, like, documented statements from prior presidents, you know, in regards to the Moors, such as George Washington. A lot of Moorish Americans were put into slavery years, you know, centuries, decades ago. He made the statement that if you take away their fezes and take away their turbans and remove their sandals from their feet, you remove their nationality. And that is how a lot of the Moorish Americans became slaves. Our nationality and everything about us was pretty much brought back to us by the Prophet Noble Drew Ali. He was a grand man who showed us the way and showed us who we really are and showed us proof of, you know, what we built, what we are a part of, and things of that nature. We live off of five principles, which are love, truth, peace, freedom, and justice. Love being the main one. We must show love at all times and not hate, no matter what it is. You know, you must love and not hate. So we are, you know, to do grand things within ourselves, but also within the communities that we live in. We must always help to uplift fallen humanity, you know, and being in the temple and becoming closer with Allah and following the teachings of the Prophet has changed me a great deal. Man, it has calmed me a lot more. It has pretty much opened my eyes to a lot more of what is really needed for the people to have and to feel love, because there's so many people who don't get that. And just all around teaching me of being a better woman, better mother, better, you know, leader. But I follow in the meantime. I don't just jump out there. I've great teachers, my Grand Sheikh, my Supreme Grand Sheikh, Supreme Grand Governor, my Grand Governor, my Grand Sheikhs, which are the women leaders. Like, I follow all of them, and they have never steered me wrong. They are just like me, believing in, you know, doing for the people and doing great things. And it has been a major, major honor. Like, I give major honors to them for the teachings and still teaching me and showing me how to lead when it is time. So being a Moorish American Muslim has most definitely benefited me in so many ways. From again, me proclaiming my nationality and knowing who I am, and utilizing my teachings to bring out the good and put nothing but good into the community.
At one point of our earlier discussions, Portia, you talked about how doing this kind of work kind of gives you an ear for the people, and they share with you what their struggles are. So is there a way you can tell us what you have seen in the community how things might have to change in the community, and then what you are hoping to do about it. I mean, you've talked a lot about direct service sorts of things. Are you, as you listen to the people around you, I also want to know if you're in conversation with other structures that might help alleviate those concerns. So first, describe what you're hearing, and then what do you do with that information?
Most of the people who I converse with speak on wanting, you know, laws changed, and speak on wanting different types of programming for children and stuff like that. So it's it's hard to sit and hear it because I know it, you know. And then you have ones who are afraid because they're afraid of backlash, like you. And then the major one is the tenant rights, you know, because you have a lot of bad landlords in this city. So it's pretty much trying to find ways to get things changed in that aspect and connecting with, you know, local officials and sitting down with them and trying to come up with, you know, ways to get people what they need in the city, you know. So hearing a lot of what the people have to say or how they feel, it's a good thing, because then I know what I can find out. You know, I know what the focus is. I know what information I need to find out and come back with to help them. You know, if I don't know it, I let them know I do not know it. Because one who thinks they know all really knows nothing. You know, we all learn on a daily basis something new. And that is how you live my life. So what I do not know, I will let it be known that I don't know it at that moment. But as soon as I find out, I will get them the information they need or resources they need to get what they want done. With the laws being changed, it's a lot of work as to educating each other on the voting, you know, and the different branches that do those types of things that they want to see changed.
So you've mentioned housing being an issue, particularly rental housing, where there are landlord issues. Can you give us any examples of some of the things that you might have heard more than once as problematic for renters in Kenosha?
Yeah, the idea of if they report the landlord will put them out of their home. I 100% do not agree with that. You own this property and they're paying their rent to you. You need to take care of it. Don't just let it go to waste, but still expect your money. That is not how it is done. Because you wouldn't want to live in a ran-down house with a leaking ceiling or pipes busting in the home, mold growing. That is unsafe and unhealthy. And especially if the home has children in it. A lot of these landlords don't do their job, but they're protected by so many different laws. It's not fair to the tenants. So that most definitely needs to be changed.
So it also sounded as though you would advocate for community education about how local housing laws develop, who you go to air your concerns, and how you advocate for them to be changed. Is that what I heard from you? To help people understand how all of this works. Who are your elected officials? What do they govern? Who makes those decisions? How do we get to be involved and at the table so our voice is heard? Do I hear you saying some of those things too?
I say that stuff all the time. I don't ask how to get involved at the tables. You just go. You find out there's a meeting, you go. That's how you have to do it now, because it's times where they will not inform the community of these meetings that the community is allowed to attend. You know, it's like they keep it hidden. The city needs to have more transparency. So all of those things you just stated, yes, that is a constant thing that not just myself, but other community leaders most definitely state out here. And also trying to find out how we can keep the tenants protected from being, you know, having backlash brought against them for reporting this landlord. You know, that is the number one thing. And it's like they just got to deal with their circumstances. No. Everyone needs to be treated fairly.
You mentioned a great concern for children in Kenosha too, particularly it sounds as if having enough resources for the kind of abundant life anyone would expect, right? So positive pastimes, transportation to get there. You had reminisced about things that were around in your childhood. What do you think children are lacking right now in Kenosha? What kinds of remedies would be, do you see?
Attention. That is the main thing. The children don't have anything to keep their minds occupied. So now we have 13 and 14 year olds who are out here selling drugs or getting hold of guns and getting into trouble and being put in the juvenile system. And now they are a part of the system that we want to keep them away from. Everything that they took away kept us from getting in trouble. You know, we weren't involved in a lot of the street stuff because we had something. And so they have taken away so much stuff. Like I said, they do have the Boys and Girls Club, but that's just it. We have a YMCA, but it's all the way out in Never Never Land. And then it's like, for some families, they can't afford it, you know? And the transportation, it's too much. Whereas in these predominantly Asiatic neighborhoods, they need these centers. They need these places for these children to come to. They need this. They need mentors. Some of them don't have a father. Some of them don't have, they have a mother, but they have a mother who doesn't care. So they're out here in the streets doing whatever. You know, they need mentors. They need us. They need the community. Like they said, it takes a village. So the village needs to, they need us to come in and show them what they've never been shown. Show them how it's possible to get to change. Show them how it's possible to do different things. Mr. Owens, I give him that because I did it and I was only in eighth grade. The college tour, he shows them the possibilities of being in an HBCU. You know, he shows them that. And a lot of these kids, they need that. They really do. And I feel it should be from the ages of 7 on up, which, grateful enough to know one of the brothers in the temple who will be starting a foundation like that, where we give the children one-on-one time, we give them classes, we teach them, you know, this is what they need. But it can't just be just us, you know, as community leaders. We need families involved. It's so many of the community leaders that want to have things involved with family programming and things like that, you know, finding out what the parent is lacking, finding out what the child is wanting, and finding ways to build those families. We don't want any more divided homes. We want to build that. We've had enough divided homes. You know, the Willie Lynch Code shows how to break those homes, and it's still being utilized today, but in a different way. There are ways to reverse that and put the homes back to where they need to be and give the people what they need, you know, and the children are our most important thing. They are the future. They are who will make this great. But we have to be willing to give them that time and those steps and that love, first of all, that love and that education and that time to show them who and what they can become and what they will become.
What obstacles stand in your way?
Nothing. It's going to happen. I used to be like, oh, I hope it happens, or I hope we can get this done for the children, or I hope, you know, I used to live off of that aspect. But again, being a Moorish American Muslim, it is most definitely in our Quran. A man does not know his strengths without a foe. I will never know what is possible to teach and give our children if I do not get up and go out here and put those steps in to make it happen for the children. So when I say there are no barriers, that I'm none, because it will happen. I know for a fact it will happen, because it's not just myself who wants to see a better future for these children. Like I stated before, my brother Carl, who is one of the activists out here with me, is so amped about teaching. We teach a lot in the temples. Like we are told to make sure that our children are industrious. We can't make sure that they are industrious if we aren't being industrious and showing them the ways of being industrious. So we have to get that done. And I know so many people who are just ready, like amped up, fired away, ready. So no, I do not see any barriers at all. Our children will be successful, and our children will have what they need, most definitely.
How do you plan to get the attention of those families that could benefit from what you're wanting to provide?
Doing what wasn't done with a lot of us. We're going to go to them. You have to build an intimate relationship with ones for them to understand you actually care. A lot of people can just put out there a little flyer or whatever, but if you don't take the time, like we got a brother, Nick Dennis, walks around, knocks on doors, and gives them sheets of paper telling them, write down what it is you may need, or, you know, won't want to discuss or whatever. You know, you got to give them that personal attention so they can see we actually care. Without someone showing them something they've never been shown before, they're going to still be where they are. We have to show different. We have to show them, hey, it's people out here that's willing and wanting to show you what's better, what you can have better, you know, help you build that strength. Because in the same time, we may be showing you something, but they can also teach us, you know, because again, we do not know it all. We are still learning on a day-to-day basis. So there are things that I can teach them, but there are also things that they will be teaching me at the same time. So we would have to get out there and actually do events and bring the families together, do one-on-one consultations with them, build those one-on-one relationships with them, and make them stronger and make their family stronger. And it will be, you're going to see, it's going to be a major, major transition. We are taught, you know, in the temple, your thoughts create all. And these thoughts, it will be brought into fruition. We will have stronger families. We will have very educated children who will be industrious and have everything they need and will be successful. We will have more of people who are Asiatics in political seats. You know, we will have more people involved in community efforts. It's going to be a major, major change. Is it going to happen overnight? No, ma'am. But a lot of us are most prepared for this journey and this transition.
So you're really talking about community organizing one household at a time, right? Building those relationships. You had mentioned that you have quite a few network relationships already in the community. And I think sometimes that is invisible for many people. In the greater Kenosha Racine area, tell us about some of the networking that you have going on in what you hope to accomplish every day. You mentioned a number of people that perhaps I think you said Mr. Owen. I don't know who that is. or what organization he's with. Maybe you can give us a little more description of some of the people and the connections that you have and where their work comes from, like what organization does it come from or who they're connected with. So people might be able to find them and make those connections as well.
Well, we have first and foremost, Ms. Arnetta Griffin. She is, in my eyes, growing up, we always had an elderly woman we would call Big Mama. And Big Mama was that everything for you as a person, you know. And that's what Miss Arnetta is. She is the mother, the whole. She has God's kitchen. She feeds the communities on a daily basis, and she was a part, the main one giving out the boxes, the free boxes of food and gallons of milk every Saturday morning, like faithfully, like clockwork in the freezing cold. So there's Miss Arnetta with God's Kitchen. You have Alvin Owens, who has the Regimen Barber Collective. He's over the college tour that he does every year with students and takes them to different HBCU colleges. You have, again, me being a part of the Morris Science Temple of America. We most definitely make sure we do nothing but great deeds for the community. So that right there is a main hole of my network is the temple. Then you have, like I said, the ones that I already have been protesting with and working with, which is Carl Green, Nick Larson, Nick Dennis, our alderwoman, Shayna Griffin, Anthony Kennedy is a good help, Andy Berg, Jerry Gully, Laura Belsky, Billy Violet, Diamond Hartwell, Brian, oh my gosh, the names, like I can go on forever. Like the people who I've been like really close with and been involved with, like those are the ones that I have been like really close knit to, with a lot of the stuff going on. Oh, Amanda, Lori, all of the women from all over who have donated and actually been a part of wanting to help women in need with things, things like that. You got Felicia Dalton, you got a Jillian who owns her own hair shop. You have Brandon Morris, you have, man, listen, it's so many people. Oh, Kenya Reap. She cooks out at the Shalom Center and also has her own catering business. She's a big help. You have Joshua and Shari Ferguson, which is family. They have the Sugar Box and Play Place. They do a lot of donating stuff for the community. You got, oh my God, it's so many. It's so many, but those are ones that I am like super, super, super close with that. Work is nonstop. Jeremy Walker is like nonstop, where we all come together with ideas and work together.
I'm going to stop you for a second, and I'm just grinning from ear to ear and chuckling because I think what happens in today's society is that those very strong-hearted people who are doing God's work every day, or as you have called it, or who are working to raise the community every day, are so, as you are, standing in a very, as you put it to me, humble place that
You've been listening to Community Matters. All programs are archived at WGTD.org. Click shows. This is WGTD.